To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. We are about to begin a new audiobook, Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, getting into Chapter 1 on this week's episode. Yes, really, this time. If this is your first time listening, welcome. This is my science fiction podcast, Glow-in-the-Dark Radio, almost 12 years young. We began in September of 2006. And now we're plowing on towards episode 500 with a fresh beginning, a new start as we get into chapter 1 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. It is a great place to join the podcast, so please share this episode around. And I'm going to set the scene in just a second here before we get into the chapter, so everyone knows who Alibi Jones is. What we're getting into here. Hope you'll stick around for the story. Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest is my most recent novel. It's also kind of a ghost story. I want to thank Buck Weiss, who asked if I had a ghost hunting story for an anthology he was putting together. Hunting ghosts. At first I said I didn't. I write science fiction, you know. Not ghost stories. But then an Alibi Jones ghost story kind of rose up in my mind, and hello, I began writing. I emailed Buck and said, hey, guess I have a story, if you want it, and he did. So Alibi Jones and the Ghost in the Machine appeared in his anthology Hunting Ghosts, and then it became part of this novel, which I was writing, Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. I was kind of absorbed into it. Completely. Hunting Ghosts itself went out of print. And so the original short story, Ghost in the Machine, is now only available in the Glow-in-the-Dark Radio Guide to Life, which you can only get if you join my mailing list. It's the only place that short story is now, because it's pretty much all absorbed into this novel. It doesn't really make sense to me to have it separately out there. So let me set the scene. Alibi Jones is trying to lay low. He's hanging out at his Aunt Anita's place on Ceres Central. We're in the year 2138. Alibi Jones has been a mediator for the Solar Alliance. And because his foster mother, his Aunt Anita, was the leader of the Solar Alliance for a few years, Alibi got to do a bunch more than just mediate. Now, recently, he broke his friends out of captivity. Ex-friends, really, but that's a different story. Katie and Kit were held captive by a crime lord, Rene Lavalore, on his planet Kismet, which is really just a city on a planet. Well, in breaking them out, Alibi destroyed Kismet, and Lavalore himself is still missing. And a whole bunch of human beings and alien beings were killed in the process, accidentally. Alibi wasn't planning for that to happen, but it did. Now, they haven't figured out that this destruction was actually caused by any one person. So far, they've been looking at it as an accident. So Alibi Jones has been fairly lucky in that sense. And the planet itself was beyond the boundaries of the Solar Alliance. And so, outside of Solar Alliance jurisdiction, mainly. But that investigation continues, so it's kind of hanging out there. His Aunt Anita is now the governor of Ceres Central. She's been running that space station, which exists on the largest asteroid that's out there, the largest planetoid in the inner solar system. It's humanity's biggest outpost right now. As the story takes place, as far as the solar system goes, when aliens come into the solar system, that's where they go. Ceres Central. Our story begins with some new folks encountering something very strange in deep space. And we start with Alibi Jones watching the news. Kind of fills you in on some details as we get into it. That's why I don't have to tell you too much here. I hope you'll stick around as we get into Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. First, I do have a little bit of news, a little book news. Seems I'm starting this new audiobook on the podcast. That's newsworthy, right? Of course, you're in the middle of that, so. I should mention that my audiobooks are out now. Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her and Alibi Jones and the Time War of the Devrisium are now available as audiobooks through Audible, which means they're on Amazon and iTunes as well as pure audiobooks. Also want to mention that there is a July sale going on, the summer-winter sale, at Smashwords, smashwords.com. It's an independent ebook seller. All my books are there, and most of them are 50% off this month. And they do have all formats for ebooks. So no matter what you read your ebooks on, you can get the format you need, the file type you need, at Smashwords. Again, that's smashwords.com. You have through the month of July to save 50% on most of my books. You can even get Alibi Jones and the Time War of the Devrisium for free. Winter Summer Sale at smashwords.com. Just look for me, Mike Luoma, L-U-O-M-A, or Vatican Assassin, or Alibi Jones. And that's it for news. We'll get into Chapter 1 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Are you having trouble keeping up with the ebbs and flows of modern geekery? Is the real world holding you back from knowing what is happening in the geeky world? To answer these and other personal problems brought in by your friends, gaming group, and loved ones, Geek Radio Daily presents daily informational sessions brought to you by the wonderful Billy Flynn, the Flynnstress, and podcasting's Rich Siegfried. They contain such helpful segments as history, geek birthdays, box office results, the latest in DVD and Blu-ray, video game and comic releases. Why, they also have a weekly show hosted by the wonderful Billy Flynn and the Flynnstress, which includes interviews and commentary. And to make sure you are informed, Geek Radio Daily also provides you with your daily dose of geek news to make sure you know more than that jerk know-it-all Steve. Visit us at geekradiodaily.com. That's right, Geek Radio Daily. All the geek without the wait. Now available in fine Corinthian leather.
Now here's Chapter 1 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Deep space. Reality rippled. The void blurred, refocused, and readjusted. An ebony shape materialized amidst the glowing crimson, black, and indigo clouds of a nebula. Out of nothing came a hulking alien leviathan, ancient in appearance. The huge interstellar traveler loomed over two small cargo vessels. Independent trader Hector Ruiz owned and captained the interstellar trading ship Libra Campista, had for over 10 years, plying trade lanes around and across the border of the Solar Alliance, near humankind's depot colony. His long-trusted associate Bob Bond ran his other ship, the Libra Campista di Dos. They'd bristle if you called them pirates. They didn't steal from others. But they didn't always operate within the law, either. Like most folks trying to make their living around the borders of the Solar Alliance, they got by. Surprised by their visitor's sudden appearance, Bond began running every scan available on the bridge of the Libra Campista di Dos. The new arrival could be a threat.
Then again, could be harmless. Hard to know, he said to himself.
The thing outside was mammoth and glistening black. It felt like a threat to Bond. Something about it rubbed him wrong. Felt like death. Bond called over to Hector's vessel as he surveyed the incoming data.
Holy. Hector, you seeing this? Bond asked. That's one giant dead old ship out there.
Seeing what, Bobby? Hector said. Hector peered at the viewscreen in front of him on the bridge of the Libra Campista, trying to make out any details in the inky black surface of the new arrival.
"Very funny, Hector."
"Space junk, amigo," Hector said. "Could be some serious salvage money."
"That thing is huge," Bond said. "I don't know, heck. There's something not right about it."
"It's dead. Inert. Muerto. Didn't know you were so superstitious, Bobby," Hector ribbed his friend. "You sound like my mother."
"Tell you what. You want it? You can have it. We're going back to Depot."
"What?" Hector asked. He couldn't believe what he was hearing.
"It looks wrong," Bond said. "All wrong, Hector. I don't know how else to put it. I'm sorry, Hector. You want the salvage? It's all yours. If I find something worth hauling off of there, you're coming back to help, you hear?" Hector warned him.
"Maybe," Bond said. Hector watched as the Libra Campista de Dos turned and flew far enough off to safely make the shift into transpace. It disappeared.
"You're a superstitious old woman, Bobby," Hector shouted at the comm.
Bond would hear the message once he crossed back out of transpace.
"All right, let's see what's up," Hector said to his crew. "Bring us in closer to that thing."
Alibi Jones let loose a bored sigh. He flipped through news feeds, looking for something to watch. The players in his aunt's room on Ceres Central had every possible human news source one could find. There was still nothing on. Alibi could hear his aunt in his mind.
"There is no such thing as boredom, only boring people."
He didn't know who she was quoting, but he hated them all the same. He was bored, and it wasn't his fault. Well, he said to himself, not entirely. Although officially still a part of the Solar Alliance Interplanetary Forces Mediation Corps, Alibi hadn't been receiving new assignments, not since he reported his involvement in the destruction of crime lord René Lavallure's city of Kismet to the Safe Brass. Though Alibi's connection to Kismet's ruination wasn't common or public knowledge, it was shared among his Safe superiors on a need-to-know basis. Unfortunately, some of those in the Mediation Corps who supposedly needed to know felt compelled to act against his best interests. They didn't like him, for varying reasons, usually having something to do with the privileges they felt he enjoyed as a result of his ties to his aunt. A few of them, including his commander, Brandywine, seized on his reported accident as an excuse to keep Alibi idled, effectively sidelined.
Watching the news instead of making it.
Boring. Tired of news, he tried the history feeds and paused when he saw an image of his aunt as a younger woman. A network was running footage from almost 20 years ago, back when she'd been prime representative of the Solar Alliance. He turned up the sound. The image shifted to two men sitting in easy chairs. A somewhat rumpled-looking older man sat silent, while the neatly groomed young host introduced them.
"Welcome back to Newsnight. We're speaking with Marco Valerius about his new book, On the World After the Eldred War, When We Were One. Thank you again for being here with us on Newsnight, Marco."
"Thank you, John.
As I mentioned before the break, one of the ideas I find most fascinating in your book is the concept of the human diaspora, as you term it. You say it was both necessary and yet, paradoxically, detrimental to humankind, to the unity of the human race. Could you elaborate on that?"
"Certainly, John. When Anita Capituna was prime representative, it was really one of her cabinet representatives, Nico Constantine, who was the driving force behind the human diaspora, backed up completely, of course, by Prime Rep Capituna."
"Of course."
"The Solar Alliance government at the time believed that one of the keys to keeping something like the Eldred War from happening again was to encourage exploration and colonization. Spread the human race out across the stars so we weren't so concentrated in the solar system, so easy to wipe out and kill. Both Capituna and Constantine were originally from the Project, which made them interstellarists, firm believers in humankind's right to procreate and populate, planet by planet by planet. After all, Constantine was the primary representative for Crankshaft, one of humanity's first colonies. And by the way,
a direct economic beneficiary of the expansion plans of the human race.
Are you suggesting Constantine was economically motivated?
Aren't we all to some degree, John? That's a rhetorical question, don't worry. Actually, in my research, I found very little evidence that money was a motivator. It was certainly a happy side effect. No, Capituna and Constantine and that first cabinet were doing what they thought was best for humankind. It was a different time.
Indeed, it was when we were one. And we're talking with the author, Marco Valerius, here on Newsnight.
Nice segue.
Thank you, Marco. So, tell me, what was wrong with spreading the human race out into the stars?
There was nothing inherently wrong with it, John. It was just... Well, let me back up a little. At first, it was a very good thing. Although it was a little slow to start. Remember, humankind's numbers had dwindled, decimated by the Eldred Plague during the war. The early push for exploration and colonization was also a call to be fruitful and multiply, as it were. And in that, the program was wildly successful. Our population exploded, increased exponentially, giving us what we historians call a post-war baby boom. Our need shifted from humanity wanting to spread out to having to spread out. The SA government growing to view interstellar colonization as necessary, not only strategically, but also necessary to relieve overpopulation pressures after the war. Plus, humanity has always had a kind of conquering aspect. The SA government, in effect, launched humankind's manifest destiny out into the stars. Was the encouragement of the human diaspora wise? It seemed so at the time. Who could argue with the idea of saving humanity? But it ultimately fractured the unity of the human race, John. Look at us now.
I suppose.
What I chart in the book is that fracturing, caused by the human diaspora. Corporations, nationalities, families that had long been allies became estranged. Spreading out as we have, we've made that inevitable, haven't we? And it's only getting worse. In my new edition, there's an added chapter on the recent dissolution of the new Catholic Church.
But Marco, humanity has rarely ever acted as one. It could be argued that during the Eldred War, we only became one due to the threat posed by the Eldred and their plague.
I don't deny that, John. It was certainly a factor. For a brief moment in time, humankind put aside its differences and actually came together. Afterwards? Without that threat? Sad. The bigger question for me is why? Why were we so quick to fall apart again? Was it because we had literally spread ourselves too thin? With humankind spreading out physically further and further apart? Even so, ultimately, even interstellar boundaries were too limiting for some.
And you can find out Marco Valerius' answer to that question of why in his new book, When We Were One, out now. Marco, thank you again for joining us on Newsnight.
My pleasure.
Theme music started to play as the segment finished.
Alibi realized he'd zoned out. The interview's end woke him up. A little.
Usually don't let that stuff play, he mumbled, blinking away sleep. Not always easy hearing about history. Weird the way they talk about my aunt.
It's not like she's dead, Alibi said, finishing the thought out loud. He was glad they didn't mention his father. Their talk of colonizing space made Alibi long for his cruiser and the peace and quiet of travel among the stars. His inactive status made that impossible at the moment. He searched for something else to watch on the feeds, to distract him from himself.
Would be nice to get out there again.
Looks like someone's been here before us, Hector Ruiz said, squinting at an unexpected feature mounted on the side of the ancient shipwreck. On the screen in front of him, searchlight dots from the Libra Campista played over a small section of the alien vessel's surface, occasionally lighting up an incongruously normal-looking, human-sized airlock door.
Someone installed a portable airlock in this old cascabillo, Hector said.
Work of the Safe Corps of Engineers, Hector's engineer, Dr. An Ryoshi, said.
She leaned forward from her perch on one of the passenger seats at the back of the bridge as she studied the airlock on the view screen. The crew of six were all up on the bridge. Everyone wanted to get a look at the spooky old ship outside.
At least, looks like their work, Ryoshi added, from here. Hector brought the Libra Campista in closer to the giant old wreck. His co-pilot Janice ran new scans on the anachronistic airlock as they drew near. "Definitely safe handiwork," Janice said. "Few years old." The lights on the bridge dimmed.
"What the? Janice, what's going on?"
Hector demanded.
"Power drain," she said. "We're getting drained. Power plant is down to 80% power."
Ryoshi rose from her seat and stepped up to the console next to Hector. She appropriated one of the floating view screens and began looking through incoming scanning data. The lighting dimmed a bit more.
75, and still dropping, Hector, Janice warned.
If it's that ship that's draining us, we're not detecting it, Ryoshi said. There's nothing connecting us to them, and there's no sign of an energy buildup over there.
Dios mío, if, Hector said, exasperated, something's draining our power. Bet it's that ship. Easy bet.
He punched at the bridge controls.
That was Chapter 1 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. And so our new adventure begins. We got to meet Hector Ruiz, Bob Bond, the Libra Campista, and Libra Campista de Dos. Discovered there's a giant ghost ship out there, and you're just beginning to learn about Nico Constantine, the new Prime representative. And I wrote about his rise back in 2012, 2013. This book actually came out in 2015. So it's wild that there's certain resemblances. But I will tell you, any resemblance between Nico Constantine and current leaders is purely coincidental. I hope. My ex-girlfriend used to tell me I should be more careful in what I write because it tends to come true. Who knows? Hope not. I'm trying to write cautionary tales, not things I want to come true. Well, this is obviously just the start of things. Nico Constantine is about to cause Alibi Jones some serious trouble. And we really don't know what sort of trouble Hector and company are in for. We've only just begun. Chapter 2 on the way next week. This was Episode 479. We are heading for 500. I have a mailing list. I'd like to invite you to join it. If you do join it, you get the Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. It's an ebook, and it's exclusive to the mailing list. The only way to get this ebook is by joining the mailing list. And there are rarities in there, things you cannot get any longer. Formerly in print, no longer in print. Black and white previews of things that came out in color. Stuff like that. It's a very cool collection. Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. And again, it's only available. You can only get that when you sign up for the mailing list, and then it's free. You can sign up at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com, mikeluoma.com, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio, or on the blog. There's even a little subscribe box in the sidebar on the blog. You can find me online, all kinds of places. I am on Facebook and Twitter under my own name, afterthere.com/MikeLuoma, M-I-K-E-L-U-O-M-A. I'm on Instagram as Glow in the Dark Radio. We have a Facebook page too, after.com/GlowInTheDarkRadio. And the Radio Activists Group, our Facebook group for friends of this podcast and my work and me. So that's all there at Glow in the Dark Radio on the Facebook page. Facebook.com/GlowInTheDarkRadio. And that is all for this week. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.